What can we learn from the failure of the disciples? Hello, I am Dave Thomas, Dean of the School of Theology, and this is The Good Word. With me today are two colleagues once more. I appreciate the fact, gentlemen, that you've been along for the whole quarter, Larry Viverka and Daryl Bigger. Our lesson today invites us to reflect on a number of instances where the disciples of Jesus, where their humanness bursts out and takes preeminence. I avoided using the word failure. We have a number of these here. First of all, the whole issue of Jesus feeding the 5,000 as it's found in John the 6th chapter, and then his refusal to be crowned king and the disappointment that followed. There's some perhaps lessons there for us to learn. There's also the story of Jesus' feet being anointed by Mary, and the whole interchange, particularly about the extravagance of that and Jesus' comments that we have a chance to look at. And there's the story also, a fascinating story in Luke 9, about the disciples' response to a group of Samaritans, a village of Samaritans that rebuffed them when they came looking for food. And you might recall that they graciously offered to have fire called down on the whole village. And there's Peter's denials and also their abandonment of Jesus at the cross. These are kind of some of the areas that we're going to take. But I thought, Larry and Daryl, that perhaps we would begin with this incident of Jesus' feeding of the 5,000. If you read that whole story, you realize that Jesus' ministry was at a peak, at a zenith at that point. And after such a great deed, there was a popular movement to have him crowned king, and he refuses. And I think that you know, the disciples were not particularly overjoyed, and the disciples that were not of the 12, the crowds that were followers of Jesus, I think became particularly disillusioned, and it says that many of them didn't follow him anymore. But I think this might give us an opportunity to reflect a little bit about the place of politics. Is there a legitimate role for it? How should Christians relate to political entities? Any thoughts on that matter from either one of you?
Well, I think politics are unavoidable in the sense that human beings must somehow interact with each other, must somehow influence one another. We usually use the word in a pejorative sense of politics, church politics. It's a bad thing or a bad word. But I don't know. I think it's sort of necessary to the process of getting things done. You must put forward your ideas. You must somehow be persuasive or convincing. You to be effective, must be able to influence people and to get their cooperation to accomplish things. That's all what politics are about.
Right? Yeah. We have to work collectively somehow. Yeah. It
is true that many, many times we Christians withdraw from that public arena thinking there's something unholy about it.
But isn't there something unholy about it? I mean, look at what happens so often to people who have power.
Hmm. Well, look what happened among the disciples. The issue of power. You don't have to go to the politician.
The unholy thing, I mean, I don't think it's innately or inherently unholy. I think we have a tendency to take many good things or good areas and to pervert them. Our relationships, our sexual interaction, for example, these are all wonderful things. They're good things. But we certainly have a knack for abusing them or using them to coerce or manipulate people.
Or letting them just get out of balance even. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, think about Daniel as a politician. He was quite successful.
Yes, he was. And I don't mean to sound like I'm against politics. Sure. I'm trying to egg you on a little bit.
Of course.
What about when you mix religion and politics, though?
You mean this church and state concept?
Yeah. Or? Yeah.
Hmm. Again, if I use politics in the sort of generic sense that I started with, again, within church structures. These are unavoidable within political, well, the secular civil realm. I think it's unavoidable. And I think the church has to, in its relationship to the state, I don't think the relationship's unavoidable. The boundaries, ways of interaction, engagement have to be defined. And that process is a political process. I think our church recognizes that by appointing people to be in conversation at various levels with those in government. Mm.
And I applaud those who are actively involved in governmental mm-hmm. affairs. Mm-hmm. It does get worrisome, doesn't it, when those with one particular point of view try to impose that on everybody else. And but I think to disengage ourselves from those discussions is doing a disservice to the country, to the world in which we live. I would want people with morals and values and very strong religious interests mm-hmm. to be among those making and designing policies.
So then what do we do about those very unhappy instances in human history where a religious ideology is wedded to, you know, with its attendant civil power is wedded to with its religious power is wedded to government with civil power. Mm-hmm. And before you dig a hole for me, I want to recognize that there are godless ideologies that have done the same thing. In mm-hmm. fact, it's quite clear that communism, for example, has been responsible for the deaths of way more people than Christianity ever was in its alliance with political might. So any reflections? I like what you've been saying about this, that we should not be aloof from politics, but so often it's gotten people in trouble when they mix church and state.
Jesus' example here in this instance leaves me in awe. For him to turn his back on the kind of popular support that I would have presumed he was after, to gather mass followings of people who would flock to him, I should have thought from a human point of view that would be exactly what the Messiah would be about.
Mm.
And yet for him to be able to step back from that and focus on his eternal mission in spite of those immediate circumstances, mm-hmm. it is an amazing model for me.
Mm. Mm.
So I would wish for minds and voices of political leaders who could do that.
At the same time, Jesus, when confronted with a sort of a Gordian problem, unraveled it nicely by saying, it's not an either or, it's really a both and. Render to Caesar that which is mm-hmm. Caesar's, and to God that which is God. You must do both.
Mm-hmm.
You must do both out of a sense of conscience and a sense of reverence for what is right and good and the best for yourself, for your community, for your family, and for the church.
Mm. But never to the point of removing from individuals their latitude for conscience themselves, right?
That's the critical mass point, I think, yes.
Let me turn our discussion a little bit to that story in Luke 9, where the disciples are rebuffed by the Samaritans, and we see them in anger suggesting that Jesus called down fire from heaven. Does this represent human failure? What is this a question of power or the misuse of power? What do you make of this story?
I like the outburst because it makes me feel so much better. when I have those brash thoughts myself, to know that even those who had committed themselves to discipleship on a face-to-face basis had that kind of trouble. It's very encouraging to me.
Although it would be pretty scary if you were a Samaritan.
Well, I think we have a tendency to react to rejection in a negative way. And there's probably two ways to do it. One is to quietly and painfully turn inward and walk away and carry the pain. And then there are others who have a tendency to turn outward and to volatilely exclaim their dismay and their unhappiness at experiencing that rejection. What we see them doing is probably human and somewhat predictable, but, you know, depending on personality and temperament, and I guess these are two disciples particularly who were known as hotheads anyway, so they weren't acting out of character in some way.
It's interesting that they wanted access to Jesus' power, to wreak this. Mm-hmm.
And this is follows on very well, I think, Dave, with the comment you made about not imposing our will on a minority group. Mm-hmm. Jesus was willing to let those people who opposed him live.
Yeah.
He didn't need to stop them, but he just went elsewhere.
And, of course, this was, in a sense, an act. It would have been an act of vengeance.
Mm.
You know, it's driven by hurt and personal injury, which I think was another very dangerous motivation. Mm-hmm. We have a few minutes left here. Peter's denials, I think a very painful chapter in his life. Do you think that he was a victim of his own rashness? Are there any lessons we can learn about ourselves lest we deny Christ?
Is some of his rashness getting him in trouble? I mean, Peter had a tendency to be impulsive. I think as an extrovert, he often thought out loud and then dealt with the consequences of his words or actions.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one that he had to deal with. And it drove him back to Gethsemane and a brokenness on that rock where Jesus agonized the night before. Now Peter did his own agonizing. I think his impulsivity, it gets him in trouble, and it doesn't end here. He still has problems with impulsivity because, I mean, you see him on the shore wanting to go around the circle and find out how each of these guys is going to die. He's influenced unduly by the Judaizers and has the confrontation with Paul in Galatians. He's not out of the woods.
No.
This story, for me, has always been a story of forgiveness.
Mm. Mm. More than one of human failure.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And to think that someone as close to God as Peter was could be forgiven by God is a tremendous encouragement.
Mm. Yeah, and of course then we have the whole story of the disciples abandoning Jesus, and It is kind of a sobering thing to see the frailties of human beings, and I appreciate your emphasis there, Daryl, that and Larry also earlier, that our discipleship is lived out in the midst of humanness, and should we make a mistake of some kind, we ought not to grovel in it, but we ought to try and find where we left off and be on with the business of the kingdom. But, well, thank you very much for an interesting discussion today, and our thanks to John Campbell, our present and faithful engineer. We trust that as you listen to the good word along the way, that you are blessed. We appreciate your listening and your responses. But for now, for Good Word, I'm Dave Thomas.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.